Good morning and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book Study. My name is Elaine B., and I am a recovered compulsive overeater from Massachusetts. Today's date is Wednesday, August 26, 2020, and this is the 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time meeting. Today, we're reading from the Big Book, and we are on page 1, paragraph 1 of Bill's story. Today's readers are Rhonda R. for the 12 Steps, Sharon W. for the 12 Traditions, Marilyn T., Amy K., and Robin P. At the end of our meeting, Wendy B. will greet newcomers and get numbers from available sponsors, and Leslie M. will close us out with some important announcements. Today, we're reading from the Big Book. And I think I just told you, we're on page 1. Paragraph 1, Bill's story. The reference number for yesterday's 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time meeting for Tuesday, August 25th, is 15215. So the 10 a.m. meeting for yesterday was 15215. And the reference number for this morning's 7 a.m. Eastern Standard Time meeting for Wednesday, August 26th, 7 a.m., is 15224, that's 15,224. The OA Preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors, and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose. OA's fifth tradition states that each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book Study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. I will now ask Rhonda R. to please read the 12 steps.
Good morning, Elaine and everyone. Thank you. I'm Rhonda R., gratefully recovered in Atlanta. These are the 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous. 1, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. 4, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed, and became willing to make amends to them all. 9, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us, and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. And thank you for the opportunity to be of service.
Thank you so much, Rhonda R. And I will now ask Sharon W. to please read the 12 traditions.
Hi, Elaine. Good morning, everyone. This is Sharon W., recovered compulsive overeater in Southern California. The 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. Our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. 2. For our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3. The only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4. Each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5. Each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6. An OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7. Every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8. Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9. OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10. Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues. Hence, the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. And 12, anonymity is a spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thank you for allowing me to be of service today, and I'll pass.
Thank you so much, Sharon W. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature and then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we're discussing and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year and for readers is 6 months. There's no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you're done sharing, let us know by saying pass, then press star 1 to mute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker should be muted using the star 1 feature on your phone, please. Today, we resume our study of the Big Book, and we are beginning Bill's story on page 1, the first paragraph, and I will ask Marilyn T. to please begin reading.
Thank you, Elaine. This is Marilyn T., grateful recovered compulsive overeater in California. Chapter 1, Bill's story. War fever ran high in the New England town to which we knew young officers of Plattsburgh were assigned. We were flattered when the first citizens took us into their homes, making us feel heroic. There was love, applause, war, moments sublime, with intervals hilarious. I was part of life at last, and in the midst of the excitement, I discovered liquor. I forgot the strong warnings and prejudice of my people concerning drink. In time, we sailed for over there. I was very lonely and again turned to alcohol. So he's in his early 20s. He's quite young, and I think this is probably one of some of his first experiences on how he got started in his career of alcoholism. I love the way Bill writes. I mean, you know, a love, applause, and moments of sublime in the midst, and intervals are hilarious. It just reminds me that he had quite a way with words. He had different ways of repeating something over and over again to make sure that we got the message. And the message I get here is, you know, the last sentence kind of says it all. I was very lonely and again turned to alcohol. And the way I identify with this is when I took food into my body, I felt like I was like everybody else. It took that edge off of the personality of feeling that you weren't part of life, that you weren't involved in it, and it gave you false courage. And that's what I feel that started my eating career, although I probably was born that way. But I feel that Bill's story, I really relate to it in the fact that very young, I started my eating career. And it wasn't until my 60s that I really found a way to identify my alcohol binge foods and behaviors and was able to get what I like to refer to as total abstinence. And with that, I pass. Thank you very much for letting me share and be of service this month.
Thank you very much, Marilyn T. I've greatly appreciated your service. So we're going to open the line up for sharing now. And although we value your experience, we do ask that you limit your share to every third day in order that others might have shared their experience, so others can share their experience too. So if you have already shared Monday or Tuesday this week, please leave an opportunity for someone else to share. And who would like to comment on this paragraph?
Deb E.
Deb E.
Penny L. C.
Penny L. C.
Kathleen O.
Kathleen O.
Elaine Greenberg.
Elaine G. Got room for a couple more if anybody'd like to say their name in there.
Sandy K.
Sandy K. Okay. Beautiful. All right. So we've got Deb E., Penny L. C., Kathleen O., Elaine G., and Sandy K. We got room for one more. Okay. Well, let's start with this, and then we'll take some more to comment on this first paragraph on page one of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Please go ahead, Deb E. You'll be followed by Penny L. C.
Thank you. Good morning. This is Deb E. in Southern California, recovered compulsive overeater. And what stumped these words, we knew young officers and we were flattered, making us feel heroic. There, here was love, applause, war, moments sublime with intervals hilarious. I was part of life at last. All what I hear in this is ego. It's all about ego. It's like this excitement at that young age that I can relate to of just like that's all I thought about. It's like, how do I look? What are people going to think of me? How can I make a great impression? You know, there was no internal work being done. It was all external. And it was all feeding my ego. I was part of life at last. I was always in such a big rush to be an adult and to grow up and the things I thought came with adulthood, you know. And in the midst of the excitement, I discovered liquor. It's like when I'm living in the world of ego and pride, then there it makes all this room for my addiction, right? If I'm living in the world of the spirit and I'm looking for connection with my higher power, then those things just don't have the same power over me. And I think this last sentence is really important. I was very lonely and again turned to alcohol. And I think he was lonely because these are the things he was focusing on, right? And I can, again, I can relate to that in my early 20s of when I was just being, I was all about my ego, even though I had no idea it was ego at the time. And it brings on this loneliness when there's no connection, when there's no spirituality, and that loneliness that I was trying to fill with food. I didn't even know I was lonely. And again, turned to alcohol. So I think that's all I have to share for this morning. Thank you for letting me share, and I pass.
Thank you very much, Deb E. Penny L. C., you're up next, and you'll be followed by Kathleen O.
Good morning, Elaine. And good morning to everyone on the line. This is Penny L.C., a grateful recovered compulsive overeater from the state of Washington. And I know that when I first read this chapter, my guide at the time wanted me to definitely identify in and, you know, to just look at what Bill's life was like and how I could relate it to my life. And I so can relate this because I remember my life was not exactly roses and rainbows. But there were times of celebration and fun and parties and gatherings of gay people, albeit even if they were behind plastic faces, and centered around food, usually. There was always food at these occasions. And so I'm joining into the liveliness and the fun and getting a lot of acknowledgement for my appearances. And so I learned early on that my appearance was important. I learned early on that, food could be a component of life. And somehow all of this meshed together in my little ego that said, okay, you're getting acknowledged, but the acknowledgement is centered around food. Don't ask me how that all congealed, except for the fact that I was obsessing over the excitement, and it also became obsession over the food. And what I obsess, I crave. And so in my gaiety and in my loneliness, I craved the food. And then I learned that that was related, that's the programming that happened that was related to my emotions. Food equaled emotional comfort. And yes, I can totally identify into what Bill's saying, and I have to take ownership. I did these things. I processed all of this way. No one did it to me. You know, that's the biggest difference here, is that this book teaches me that I have to take ownership for my part and not be blaming anyone else. And also that there is a way out. As long as I seek and follow my higher power's will for me, I can break free of all of these old regimens that I had picked up along the way. These old ways of trying to cope. Thank you, God, that there's another way. And that Bill describes it here and that I can relate to that. And with that, I'll pass. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Penny LC. Kathleen O, you're up next, and you'll be followed by Elaine G.
Good morning, Elaine. This is Kathleen O, recovered in Northern California. And just like Penny said, this is a story for us to identify in. And when I first saw this story, read it, I thought, this doesn't make any sense to me. I didn't go to war, not a man, don't live in the 30s. But it's not about, you know, identifying with Bill as a person, but really identifying to his behavior around alcohol and, you know, what alcohol did for him. Normal people don't have relations with or relationships with inanimate objects like food and alcohol. And so where I could identify in with this was when I was at parties, I was always focused on the food. I wasn't focused on the people. Family get-togethers, same thing. And, you know, Bill's story is as heart-wrenching as most of our stories. It's about his descent into alcohol. And, you know, here's a young officer. He's flattered by the attention of civilians. They're making him a hero. There's applause. There's celebration. They welcome him into, you know, their home. And he feels a part of. And yet, you know, he discovers alcohol. And he forgets those warnings that, you know, alcohol is a subtle foe. And the quote, "I was very lonely and again turned to alcohol." So we're going to see in Bill's story how he relies on himself, his pride, his vanity, grandiose. It's like, I, me, me, me. You know, it drives him to the point of self-destruction. And I had that same experience with food. You know, this disease is progressive in nature, and it really pulled me into the depths of health. it ruined relationships because I was just so tied up in my ego and being right and self-righteous and wanting things to go my way. And of course, when they didn't and they never did, who would I turn to but the food? So it's so amazing to be able to, you know, have this program where we work the steps. We rely on a higher power. We rely on something that's bigger than us, and have a relationship with this higher power rather than having a relationship with the food. And when that happens, life is so much better. Even like you were talking about in the beginning, Elaine, we all have problems. But our problems, for me, my problems are so much more, they get solved quicker and easier when I get out of the driver's seat and just let my higher power direct me. And I'm always directed in the right way. I know I'm directed in the right way when I feel in my heart that I'm helping myself and I'm helping others. If one of my choices is making...
Gentle reminder.
And I'll pass. Thank you, Elaine.
Okay. Thank you so much, Kathleen. okay, we've got Elaine G up next and then Sandy K. Please go ahead.
Hi, everybody. I can really relate to this first paragraph here, and it made me remind me that when I was an adolescent, no, actually, when I was a teenager, actually started adolescent teenager, my father constantly yelling and yelling and yelling at myself, my sister, my brother especially, how he was always mischievous and doing things wrong, and he was hitting him. And my father would say, and you know, like my father was like a dictator, almost like telling us, this is the way things are going to be. And the way I dealt with that was, especially in my teenage years, I started smoking. And then I, when I went, took the car to the store, I ended up eating, buying candy bars. And then late at night, I ended up eating compulsively. When I would go to, by Mitch's weddings, I ate compulsively, and my mother would put my sister and me on the scale every day, and it's too much, you know, and telling us we need to go on a diet, so she'd get these hard-boiled eggs ready for us to go to school. And then when in my marriage, I don't know, my husband was abusive, I didn't know this, and I would go down to the bar in the honeymoon there, sit at the bar, drink, and eat all the stuff they had at the bar. Who cared what it was, right? And then also the husband said he left me because of my weight, that I gained a lot of weight, and he cheated on me, you know? And also, after my marriage, when my son was taken away from me, I really started eating. You know, because I was drinking at that point and came home, moved to Bayside, Queens in New York, and really gained a lot of weight. Sat at the bar in the shopping center, drank, came home, ate to kill the pain of moving by myself. I had to have my parents move with me until I got up to like 263 and going to my son's wedding. Couldn't breathe in the girdle. My mother got the tightest girdle for me to wear. And, well, you know, food played a big part in my life. It seems like I ate over everything. Ate over the whole marriage. Ate over the fact that I was alone, moved to Bayside, Queens alone. Ate over relationships. Ate over everything. And did it help anything? No. What happened was it turned on me. It affected my health, my heart.
Gentle reminder.
Okay. And then also right now I'm confronted with a certain situation here that I have no control over, I don't think. Even though I put it in my guard box, I'm still not letting go of it. But anyway, that's it.
Thank you so much for sharing, Elaine G. Okay, we've got Sandy K is coming up next, and after Sandy, we'll take another lineup for people who'd like to comment on page one, paragraph one of Bill's story. Please go ahead, Sandy K.
Thank you very much. So happy to be at this meeting this morning. I am Sandy Kay, a recovered compulsive overeater from Florida. The word that sticks out in this entire paragraph is lonely. I've been in program a few decades, and only recently did I think to myself, I must have been really lonely in middle school and high school because I had almost no friends. And so some people were sharing about the parties they went to. I was not invited to very many parties, and it wasn't because of my weight. It was because of my really low self-esteem. I was almost a shadow walking in the halls of high school. And even if I were like Bill, landing wherever he landed in, you know, in the war before he went out to actually fight, I don't even know if I would have felt the applause. I would have seen it, but I don't think I would have taken it in. So I understand about low self-esteem. And through this program, working the steps, I have chipped away at that low self-esteem. And what shines up or shines down is a feeling of humility that I'm not better than, I'm not less than, I'm the same as. I may be unique in my own way, and that's great because I'm me and I don't need to be anybody else. But that took me a while in program to come around to that. Also, there's an expression, halt, hungry, angry, lonely, and tired. And with COVID, there have been some times that I'm lonely. But by the grace of God and with this program, I can pause and think, what can I do to alleviate my loneliness? And that has worked. So I love that we're starting on page one. And it's not a coincidence that I have two sponsees that are starting also right here. We're here. And so with that, I will pass.
Thank you so much, Sandy Kay. So just a general reminder, although we value your experience, we ask that you limit your share to every third day in order that others might share their experience too. So if you had a chance to share on Monday or Tuesday, please step aside and let others share today. Who would like to comment on that first paragraph on page one?
Martin J.
Stephen G.
Kathy Z.
Sherry K.
I heard Marty.
Marty
Sherry
J.
K.B. Marty J. Thank you. And I heard
Kathy Z.
Stephen G.
Stephen G. And Kathy.
Z as in zebra.
Okay.
Mo H. Wendy B from Chicago.
And Wendy B, I think that may be all we have room for. So let's go with this. Marty J, Sherry KB, Stephen, I heard your initial of your last name, but I didn't catch it quick enough to write it down. Kathy Z, Mo H, and Wendy B. All right. So Marty J, please kick us off, and then we'll have Sherry KB.
Hi, this is Marty J from Torrance, California. Good morning, everybody. I really appreciate your shares. This first paragraph in Bill's story just really reminded me of a time when I was headed out of state, off to college in my not quite at 20, I guess I was 18. And but I remember being there in from 18 to, you know, 22 or so. And that feeling of having just lost probably about 60 pounds being on Optifast finally felt like I was in a normal sized body that was like other girls. Arrived in my dorm, and the four of us living together in a little apartment dorm where we could cook together, and it was back to all the foods that I had been warned about, and those strong warnings and those prejudices of my people. And I knew
that I had to eat a certain way and I had to look a certain way so that I could finally be living this life that I had always dreamt of and imagined and that was normal. And it wasn't anything like that because while I was very extroverted and I was the life of the party, I didn't get Marty Party, that nickname for nothing. I realized that I ate differently. I did things differently. And I, even though I lost that 60 pounds in the summer before college, I gained 80 by the end of the year. And I couldn't stop myself. And I didn't know what was so different about me. But my life completely revolved around food. And even though I looked the part, I had the confidence, I had all these things going for me, I just couldn't stop eating. And I really didn't know why, except that I felt like I lived in a lot of shame. I can look back on those things, but in the moment, the expectations I had of myself were just really high. And but, you know, time and perspective has brought me to where I'm at now many, many years later. And so grateful for Overeaters Anonymous, for the Big Book, for having found this group back in March, first hearing about it in January at the LA birthday party, and having attended a Big Book workshop there.
Gentle reminder.
Thank you. And anyway, 20 pounds down since the beginning of COVID, and really grateful to be listening each week here to all of you. Thank you. I'll pass.
Thank you very much, Marty J. Sherry KB, you are up next, followed by Stephen, who will give me his first initial of his last name. Thanks, Sherry KB. Please go ahead.
Good morning, Elaine. Good morning, everybody. It's Sherry KB in Northern California. Very grateful, recovered, compulsive reader. Thanks so much for your service, Elaine. Nice to hear you on the line and Team Wednesday. Forgot what day it was. Anyhow, I wanted to start with that I love Bill's story because it's the entire Big Book condensed in his story. And I know how important it is for me to identify in with Bill. Because my disease wants me to identify out. So I always need to remember about identifying in and thinking about, did I eat the way Bill drank? Did I think the way Bill thought? And did I feel the way Bill felt? And so, you know, trying to identify in with this paragraph reminds me of when I did lose the weight. I got applause. I couldn't believe that I would, you know, to me in a way it was hilarious because, you know, also, I was taught about what looked good on the outside, not what was important on the inside in a sense, but what looked good on the outside. But I was also warned about it because I found a strategy to lose weight, and I was warned that, you know, it wouldn't last, but I didn't listen to it. And when I think about how, you know, I used to celebrate it, you know, with food, the minute I'd lose the weight, it would be like going to Weight Watchers and losing the weight and then going and celebrating because I lost the weight with food. And it just, you know, but what happened was over and over again, this little strategy that I had didn't work after a while. And I was warned about it early on, but I didn't pay attention to it. And what I realized is that, you know, food became a lower companion for me is what happened. I isolated, and I definitely don't see God in this first paragraph at all whatsoever. And I thought I had arrived, really. Because I found a way out, so I thought, and it was all through self-will and without asking God for help. And I just keep thinking about how I was warned back in the day, and I just thought, well, this isn't going to happen to me. And it absolutely did happen to me. And whenever I was lonely, whenever anything came up, whenever a feeling came up, I always turned to the food. It was like having a lover. It was like having a boyfriend. It was like having a best friend all rolled into one. It's just that it was so dangerous that I didn't know that it would turn on me like a boomerang. And, you know, I just didn't pay attention because of my self-will was so in there. And again, I didn't turn to God, but today the difference is I do turn to God. I turn to the steps. I turn to my fellows. That's the difference today, is that I try not to run. I try not to run the series show. Not saying that I still don't sometimes, but I'm doing better. And with that, I pass. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Sherry KB. Stephen, you're up next, followed by Kathy Z. And if you could let us know the first name, your first initial of your last name, that would be great.
Yeah, good morning, Elaine. Thanks for your service. I'm Stephen G. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater in Toronto, Canada. The doctor's opinion, which we've just finished, basically laid out the foundation for me of the nature of the disease as described by a scientific objective observer. The twofold illness, double whammy, the allergy of the body, the obsession of the mind, and his realization, Silkworth, that he's powerless. And then his experience or observation of the solution and the recovery that happened to some of these alcoholics. So now we're getting a first-person account from a sufferer. And what I see here is the beginnings of the physical allergy of the body for Bill Wilson. As it says in the doctor's opinion, you know, men and women drink essentially because they like the effect. And so, as with me, a compulsive overeater, I ate when I was happy and I ate when I was sad. And so he's drinking to get the effect when he's excited. He's also drinking when he's lonely. He hadn't really started to see the true phenomenon of craving, but it's beginning. And he's looking for that sense and ease of comfort, which comes at once. Otherwise, he's restless, irritable, and discontent. The other thing I'm seeing is the foundations of the second part of the disease, the mental obsession, which is his excessive self-concern and his excessive self-focus. He's flattered. People are making him feel heroic. He's really enjoying this love and this applause. He's got this need to be special based on, which was similar to me, this low self-esteem. As it says later in the book, selfishness, self-centeredness, that was the root of my problem, driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, and self-pity. He needs human validation to feel better, and there's no God in his life whatsoever. And as the disease progresses and he starts to look for the solution, that becomes the main blockage to his spiritual experience, which is what I found as well. And it was steps 4 through 9 and then steps 10 through 12, which has allowed me to remove that self and allowed me to get a connection to my higher power. But I can totally relate to this. You see how many times he uses the words I in this sentence. I was part of life. I discovered liquor. I was very lonely, et cetera, et cetera. What's interesting is when he went overseas, he was accompanied by hundreds of young men his age, but he was very lonely. And I could definitely relate to that. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Stephen G. All right, Kathy Z, you are up next, followed by Mo H. Please go ahead, Kathy.
Hi, thank you so much for letting me share. Thank you for your service. This is Kathy Z in Washington State. And I can definitely identify in here between 18 years old and maybe 23. It was definitely sex, drugs, rock and roll, and food. And this huge obsession in my mind. I was so awful and evil to myself in my mind that I was using sex, drugs, rock and roll, and food to escape. But I was highly functional in life. Moved out really young, and from everybody else's what they were seeing on the surface, they were seeing a successful young person. I didn't have a weight issue at the time. And so I would get compliments, except for certain members of the family. When I was gaining weight, they were commenting on body parts rather than talking about you need to lose weight. It was like, oh, well, your behind is fat, or your calves are big, or you're, you know. So there was a lot of judgment that way. But I was the queen of self-judgment and self-hatred. And so I lived in that while I was functioning. So to me, that was my war. You know, Bill was in he was in a physical war. I was in a mental, spiritual war. At that time, I was also seeking spiritual relationship as well. And I felt like I did have a relationship with God, but it was still external. Everything was external. And the way that I tried to relate in life, especially with people, while I was in this this mental obsession of hatred, was number one, I could eat with people. And my boyfriend at that time was skinny as a rail, and he could eat so much food. And so we would eat. We ate all the time. Did we have a really good personal connection with each other? No, but we had food. So I ate a lot with him and with family. And whenever I was uncomfortable in situations with people, I could eat with them and feel like I belonged. And it was the same with other substances, you know. Get out of yourself and get in the fog of substances and food, and Kathy, you'll get along just fine. So that was the early years of the allergy of the body beginning, the obsession of the mind, and I'm so thankful for the 12-step program, and I'm so thankful for my higher power helping to reveal the truths of my past and helping me reconcile them today so that I can live happy, joyous, and free. Thank you so much for letting me share. Have a great day. Bye-bye.
Thank you very much, Kathy Z. Malaj, you're up next, and you'll be followed by Wendy B.
Hey, good morning, Elaine. Thank you very much for your service. This is Mo H., recovered compulsive eater in Walnut Creek, California. 3 weeks ago today, my husband passed away, and today I need to re-enter into this phone meeting. I have been just listening to it and letting the voices of others carry me, but I can't isolate anymore. And so the word that of course struck out at me was loneliness, that I am feeling loneliness not like I have never felt before. And it was the time when I ate, when nobody was around. I wanted to be alone. I started out eating in my closet in my bedroom as a younger person, and then as I became an adult, I'd wait till everybody went to bed. And, you know, if I was eating then, it didn't count because nobody saw me. So now I am alone. I am alone for the first time. My kids have been staying with me, and I said, I need to do this. At some point, I'm going to have to do this. So this is the first week I'm alone, and I needed to find my voice and come back on the line and be present with all of you that have given me so much love and support. Someone asked me how my abstinence was, and I said, well, it's the same. And thank God I've been weighing and measuring for 4.5, going on 5 years, and it's become a habit. So I didn't change that habit. Thank God that I kept that the same. But you know, I have to learn a new way. And, you know, lonely is part of grief, I guess. And so I just wanted to open my voice and become present. It's tough right now, but, you know, life goes on. And we had 53 good, you know, good and difficult years of marriage, but a long time. And he was ailing. And so I think with that, I'll pass. Thank you, Elaine.
Mo, thank you so much. We're very, very sorry for your loss and happy to hear your voice. You're an important part of this community. Thank you. Wendy B., you're up next. We may have time for a short share after Wendy B. Please go ahead, Wendy.
Thank you. I am Wendy B. from Chicago.
very grateful to be here. Celebrated 1 month of abstinence for the first time, and it's amazing things that have happened in my life. For that, I'm so grateful. I've read the Big Book a number of times, but from a different perspective. And when I read this paragraph, what jumps out to me is the word that Bill used to describe himself, new, young officers, and then the things that he found. They were flattered. They felt heroic. Here was love, applause, war. He was part of life at last. And I can think, you know, I'm imagining he's, what, 18, no older than that when this was all taking place. I can remember so many times throughout my life looking for what is that thing that's going to make me feel that I was part of life at last. Now, I have other addictions, so I've worked on that as well. But just the idea of food being part of the celebration, being part of this, and how that can turn, well, how it does turn on people like us, like a boomerang in flight, and just hit us right between the eyes. The other thing that jumps out is forgetting the strong warnings and prejudice.
Excuse me, Wendy. I just want to let you know we're not hearing you really clearly. Okay. Just if there's an adjustment you can make, that'd be great. Thank you.
I sure can. Hold on.
Is that better?
Oh, so much better.
Thank you. Well, I won't go over everything I said, but the other thing that jumps out to me is how. He forgot the strong warnings and the prejudices of his people concerning drink. His ego telling him, I know better. And, you know, he was going to be able to manage and control this now that he's discovered this thing called alcohol. And he's going to be chasing that that high for so many years. And I can so relate to that feeling of just chasing that feeling of being part of life at last. And just in the last month, coming to this feeling of not my ego feeling part of life at last, but my spirit feeling relief at last. So I'm so grateful to be here today. Thank you all.
Thank you so much, Wendy B. We do have time for a 2-minute share. Somebody'd like to jump in there?
Larry G.
Larry G., it's all yours. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Larry from Northern California, compulsive eater. Condolences, Mo. Sorry about your loss. Had a lot of firsts in summer '71. I flew 3,500 miles to Toronto. I played in a collegiate baseball league. Had not started drinking. So I really relate to Bill in this aspect in terms of, boy, I felt like I arrived. When I was leaving Santa Barbara, flying to Toronto, I just felt better than my friends were there, my family was there, and I just couldn't wait to get out of Dodge. That was the first. And I was playing this collegiate baseball league. I was I lived in this really nice boarding home with my roommate, who was a normal eater, lovely older woman, very clean house, private room, and she said that you're eating me out of house and home. I was waking up in the middle of the night, going down, having a fourth meal, and I ended up getting placed in another boarding home. So this is my first experience getting in trouble with food. In this boarding home I was in, it was not clean. It was not a clean place. It was not a friendly place. And so I had already was descending into hell, and I ended up eating for the first time spoiled food. I got food poisoning after 2 weeks in Stratford, Ontario. I flew home. I was never obese at that time. I was a big man, but in very good shape. And I went from 220 pounds down to 170. I was in the hospital, very sick because of my compulsive overeating and my compulsive food behaviors, eating poisoned food. I descended pretty quickly, but it took a while to later on, after I got sober in 1981, is when I started to compulsively eat big time, replace the booze. And boy, that eating over loneliness. Thank you so much for your service. I pass.
Thank you so much, Larry G., and everyone who shared their story in relation to Bill's story today. We're now going to transition the meeting by reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. Will Amy K. please read A Vision for You?
Can I read that? This is Elaine from New York.
Actually, we have an assigned reader for that, Elaine. Thank you for offering.
Okay.
You can sign up for service next week. In the following month. But we have Amy K. lined up for that today.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Good morning. It's Amy K. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater in New York. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.